this morning I'd like to give some instructions. And start with one or two comments about the purposes of what we're doing here. Can you hear me at the back? Oh. No, you're sitting right next to the air conditioner, so you have to choose, I think, whether to listen to the air conditioner or to listen to the voice. The Buddhist teachings are very interesting and very, very penetrating in giving some suggestions how to cope with the existential difficulty of living. The fact that life seems to us limited, unsatisfactory, dependent, short, and sometimes a bit nasty. And the perspective is very clear that there's no problem with life. In life itself, there is no problem. And more than that, the nature of life is pure bliss and freedom. The problem lies in how we receive and interpret this life. The problem lies in mind, and that big word. And that the mind is busy forgetting. The mind is busy forgetting. Forgetting the infinite qualities of life, and busy with survival, fear, insecurity, tough kid, duty, action, and looking after itself. And so this is, in a word, avidya, means ignorance. Ignorance, a kind of a veil, and this is used, an image used in both in Buddhist teachings and in Kabbalah, the veil. That we're so busy with ourselves, with the mind, that, you know, we can hardly, maybe a little bit we can see, a little bit, but we're going through life locked in a kind of patterns and forgetting. And the teachings also say that this infinite quality of life is not out there. It's actually in here. And that we are all embryo Buddhas. We all have in us the purity and the joy and the bliss and the freedom. And so in a sense our task is not to find freedom somewhere else, but to remember it. And our task here in our practice is a task of remembering. One of the Pali word for mindfulness, sati, is actually remembering. It's remembering where we are, remembering who we are, remembering what is, not what we think about it, how we interpret it, judge it, how we want it, how we don't want it, to remember what is. And through remembering what is over a long period of time, keep going back to remembering what is. This is gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we find ourselves in another territory. Not here, but a little bit. Open the veil. And the veil can be opened all at once or gradually. depends on many, many things completely beyond our control. Or shall we say partly beyond our control. And it's another comment I should make, that we will always be using two languages. And Christopher uses the two languages a lot, and we will always be using two languages, and you yourself in your practice will be using two languages. And one language is the language of no method. It's all right. We're here. Life is just as it is. Be present. No method. And the other language is the language of method. That there is a step-by-step process and so on. And if you look carefully in your own experience, I think you'll find both together. You'll find method, following instructions, and you'll find moments when there is no method. You don't know exactly what you're doing. You're just here. There's a tree outside. There's a foot stepping on the earth. No method. So I think it's just to be aware that these two coexist in the teachings all the way through from the first talk of the Buddha until our present experience. There is method and there is no method, and often it's a point of view. Where we choose to look, we will see method or we will see no method, and the wisdom is to know how to hold both. It's not a paradox. It's a point of view, where we look. So, to hold both together. So this morning I'm going to talk quite a lot about method, because it is important to have a sense that there is a journey to be travelled and there are specific things that can help us. And we should be aware of method and be aware of something beyond method. One of the words that's often used in the teachings is purification. A sense of cleaning, nikui, purifying the mind. And this is in a sense on the side of method. And there's an image of the mind, a pure mind is like gold. Because it's pure, because it's workable, you can do anything with it, you can make it into anything. It's shining and bright. This is one of the many, many, many images in the tradition. So our task is, how do we work with our mind, which is full of stories, issues, pain and difficulty, history, biography, stress, and joy, freedom, and so on. How do we work with this whole package in practice to purify it, to transform it to gold, the alchemical process? And we can't really take out our mind and put it under a tap and wash it clean. And it's quite difficult to clean the mind with the mind itself. Because it's like, as also in the tradition, it's like washing, like we see in the kitchen here, when the water gets dirty and we have to wash another cup and another cup, and it's already washed 100 cups, so it's dirty water trying to wash something clean. And so we have this existential problem of how to clean the mind with the dirty mind. And there is where the power of mind objects comes in. The body is an object for the mind. And the body is our primary mind object, in which we work, in a sense, to transform our relationship to ourselves. That means the mind's relationship to itself. Because how do we know we have a body? Just through awareness. Otherwise we have no idea what's below here. No idea. I see a hand, but someone's told me that this is a hand. I see something, it's through the senses, and the mind is interpreting, the mind is feeling, the sensations are moving, and through all of these channels I know I have a hand. So the hand is entirely a mind object. So we use the body as an object of meditation because it's clear, simple, direct way of the mind looking at mind. And in the tradition there are basically four what's called foundations of mindfulness. And the first and the most basic and the easiest to work with is the body as an object of meditation with which we work to purify, to find our freedom. And another level is feelings. That means reactions, what's pulling us, what's pushing us, which if they're strong become emotions, if they are with thought, with a whole package of strong feelings here, they become emotions. But they can be very delicate feelings, which are just a sense I like, I don't like, or neither like nor not like, a kind of reaction to the world, a sense of the world, which is not the body exactly, it's not thought either. And today we can pay more attention to that level of our perception of the world, our receiving of the world, the level of feelings, the level of emotion, the level of how we react. So there's two more levels in the classic tradition. The third is the world of thought and mental content. And the fourth is states of mind, qualities of mind, qualities of being, and consciousness itself. And so these are the four foundations of mindfulness. Up to now we've worked mostly with the first, the body, and today we can begin to work more with feelings, or include more the feelings in our practice as another level of object of meditation. It doesn't mean to say that we forget the body. We always include the body in our practice. And I'll explain that in a minute. It was interesting, last week a doctor came to visit me, and he was a specialist in treating chronic pain. And we had a long talk, 3 hours. And I asked him, well, what do you do with chronic pain patients who no drugs help? After all the morphine and the codeine and so on, and the pain is still there, what do you do? And he said, well, I teach the patient to look at the pain in a different way. That the patient is there, I am here, and the pain is there. Separate yourself from the experience of pain. And sometimes I use ways of uses hypnosis, but he also uses ways of just showing that there's a big being here which is not pain. And I said, where did you read about that? He said, oh, in books of insight meditation. and kol hakavod that he got it. But I asked him about the model. How does he perceive what happens with chronic pain? And he said what happens is that there are nerves that become, through history, through an injury in the past, like a road accident, the nerves become sensitized and they are stuck. They cannot be they cannot move from the loop, magal kesem, of too much sensitivity. They're stuck in sensitivity. And the person who is busy with pain, worrying about it, angry about it, concentrating on it, is actually adding to the loop, is not letting the nerves become desensitized, to reduce their sensitivity. So he says what we do when we teach people to step back from the pain, step back from the sensitivity, is to allow these nerves to become desensitized, to have other things going on, to know I'm bigger than my pain, and gradually everything settles down, to know that this finger has no pain. It's a very important discovery for people in chronic pain. They don't know this. They think pain is everywhere. So it's just an interesting model of how we work in a way with breath and body. We begin to establish ourselves as a watcher, as a as an observer, as a whole human being, present and there, able to contain and watch the changes that are happening to us, able to be bigger than the changes that happen to us moment by moment. So the tools we use and the tools we develop, we already talked about. They're tools of concentration, tools of mindfulness, awareness, remembering where we are, tools of mainly of attention. Attention like a light focusing on different things. Krishnamurti says, attention is a fire and it burns our suffering. It's a beautiful image that the attention, the tool, the main tool we use is attention, and in attention it's very pure, very clean. Here we are, present and steady, and we are just turning the light of attention on objects of mind, on mind objects, on events that happen to us. And that's the basis of meditation practice. So today we should continue, and in fact during the entire course we should continue with working with breath, because breath is the foundation. Working with breath means getting closer to it, becoming aware more and more of the dimensions of the breath. What's going on when we take one breath? The sensations, the qualities of the breath. Trying to be more intimate with each breath. Creating interest. And by the way, this is an antidote to boredom. The breath holds a lot of interest. It's very alive. There's things going on. There's no two breaths that are the same. So we receive, and we can relax also, and feel ourselves really relaxed, really carried by the experience. Not trying too hard, not pushing too hard, but just relaxing into the experience of this breath, letting it take us, letting it hold us. By doing that, we do develop concentration. We don't need to push too hard to judge ourselves. We want 5 breaths, 6 breaths, 7 breaths. It can be a much more passive, or at least a relaxing, easy process where we drop into the breath. And because we give the breath importance, there is concentration. It just happens by itself. We choose the breath as a place to rest our entire consciousness, and one breath at a time, and not to worry too much whether we, after that, what will happen, or before that, what did happen. This one breath is an important experience. What's its texture? Can we be with it all the way? Can we be intimate with it? So that process of getting close to the breath, a breath, one single breath, is our path to concentration and steadiness and interest, and also peace, and also calmness. And we can feel in a way that the breaths are like a kind of boat that carry us on a journey. we're inside the boat, and it's carrying us on a journey. And it can be a very pleasant process and a very easy process. We just need to take off the pressure, be there with it, be steady with it, but take off the pressure a little bit and just rest with attention and mindfulness in this one breath. In relation to thought, thoughts will come just like the blood will circulate in our bodies. And at this time, it's useful not to get locked into thought, but as quickly as we can, remember to be present again with the breath. Just to know we were lost. Because when you're in thought, it has the quality of sucking our whole being into thought. Thought is very powerful. It sucks us in. So when we come back from thought, as Brian said, it's a little bit like we wake from sleep. We know we weren't here. And it's a very interesting experience. We just simply weren't here. We didn't exist in a strange kind of way. And suddenly we're back and we exist. I know my legs and my voice and my hands and I exist. But in thought, it's like we're so busy in the movie, we become the actors in the movie and we're lost in the movie and we don't know there's a movie hall and an audience and a world out there. So we can be aware of that, lost ourselves and found ourselves. We lose ourselves and we find ourselves. And that process just carries on. Come back to the breath, we find ourselves again. We're back in this presence. If things happen at the level of the body that we are clear about, we can move off the breath and be with the body. Can be a strong sensation in the body, can be a pain, it can be touch, it can be irritation, it can be hot, it can be cold, it can be anything. But if we feel the body sensations that are strong and clear, we can just leave the breath and stay with the body sensations for a while. And sometimes the body, the sensation of sitting and just being here, is a good place to, if we feel really confused and we're not sure where to go next and what's happening to us, it can sometimes help us to ground ourselves back to the body. Solid earth, it's simple, direct, clear. So we just drop back into the body again. When we experience things in the body, we, at the same way as we work with the breath, we open them like a pain. We can open it a bit. We can have dialogue with it. We can see where it is, what's going on with it, where is its limits, where is it exactly, how is it? And all the time a sense of observer. I am here and the pain is there and I'm with you. I'm not against you. I'm with you. It's a sense of participation in your true experience. So here is pain and I'm here with the pain. Let's have a look and see what is it saying, this pain. What's its language? So working with a strong body sensations is something we can do. Moving off the breath, being with things that are truly happening to us on the level of body, and then returning to the breath, all the time going back to that steady, calm, quiet base for our consciousness. And feelings will be there. We feel hot, and if we look, we will experience the sense that hot is uncomfortable. There is a quality of feeling in there which is, I don't like. But what is that? It's something we can open. It's something we can experience. We have a noise in the room. It irritates us, disturbs us. So, in the mind, what's happening? What is this thing called disturbance? It's just life. Someone driving a tractor near the meditation hall. We're not going to be able to get rid of it. What is our reaction? What is this thing called, I am disturbed by something? What's going on? These are feelings. These are qualities of going towards, going back from, withdraw from, going to. And this is a whole area we can begin to explore. How we react to our experiences moment by moment. And these feelings tend to grow and become emotions. For example, judgment. Oh, I'm no good at this. I didn't experience more than three breaths just now, and that's not good enough, and yesterday I was better at it. And judgment, it has a feeling in it, and it grows, and along with the feeling comes thoughts, and along with the thoughts come a whole story and memory and stronger feelings, and there's a loop that we get into, and there we build negative emotions or positive emotions also. So feelings growing to emotion. It may not happen, it may happen. Don't look for anything special, don't try and dig it up. If you don't have emotions, that's absolutely fine. But if you do have emotion, that's absolutely fine. And here is something to work on. The way we work with emotion is allowing it to express itself. We don't suppress emotion. We don't censor. There is no need for a censorship, to say, no, it's not good that I think judgmental thoughts. They're there. We're looking at ourselves in the mirror. Here is a judgmental thought. I'm no good. Or he's no good. Or he's disturbing. Or he's taking too much food. These judgmental thoughts, we now can begin to take ownership of them. I don't really like the word take responsibility, but it's a bit like that. We know they're coming from us, and therefore we can begin to have relationship with them. And so having relationship with these kinds of feelings and thoughts that go together, this package that is an emotion, working with it is about receiving it, being with it, just like a breath. Knowing that there is emotion here, letting it flower, letting it express itself, letting it show itself, being with it sympathetically, staying with it a while, seeing its dimensions, seeing where it is in the body, seeing what you feel about it, seeing any discomfort that goes with it. What happens to the breath when you have these judgmental thoughts? What happens to the breath? Is it changed? And then, the other important aspect, letting it go again. You don't need to hold on to it. Naturally it will go. And just watch the change, and watch that something else is taking its place. Can be another breath, can be the bell, it can be anything. Don't stay in it, don't get sucked into it. Just naturally let it express itself and then go. And be very aware when it's there, and be very aware when it's not. Say bye-bye, history. This emotion is no longer here. And come back to the breath. Come back to the stability. Come back to the ground which allows us, this ground, to receive and take responsibility for emotions. Without the ground, we wouldn't be there enough to receive and to see and to be the observer of emotional states, because they're also strong. A little story, which I like very much, about this taking ownership, showing the ownership we have over our emotions. There was a woman that had a dream that she was being chased by a monster. And in the dream, it was a really long, long story. The monster was huge and ferocious and running after her, and she was running up hills and down through valleys and over through forests, and the monster was behind her, and she could feel it behind, just behind her, chasing her, and she was very scared. And she was running, and in the end she came to a wall, a tsuk. And she didn't know what to do. She couldn't run anymore. And she turned around and she faced this monster that was coming there with big teeth and racing up to her. And it stopped just in front of her. And she said, what are you going to do to me? And the monster said, I don't know, it's your dream, isn't it? So we can now see our monsters, our stories, as our dreams. We can take responsibility for them. We can be a little bit more intimate with them, hold them in our attention, and really undress them, take off their clothes, see what there really is there. And it doesn't matter which kind of feeling there, sometimes very strong, but if we do it again and again, these monsters get smaller, they do change, they take off their clothes, and they can even reveal to us some very interesting things that we didn't know about ourselves and about what they are. So, in summary then, we are moving between two kinds of purification, two kinds of practice, and one is keeping on with this steady, quiet ease, the ground of our consciousness, a breath, another breath, building our attention, building our presence, building our awareness, and that giving us more space, more peace, more ability to be a good observer of life, more connection with life itself. And on the other side, content. When it happens, content, especially feelings, emotion, meeting, knowing them, working with them, and letting them go, coming back to the ground, coming back to the simplicity and the quiet and the calm awareness. And we move between these two areas of practice. And a final word, that one of the most interesting things about the Buddhist path, in my mind, is that when we talk about the veil that hides the bliss, the Buddhist path says in the veil itself we can find freedom. In the stuff is freedom. We don't need to cut the veil and look over there. But we can actually find freedom inside the difficulty, inside the issues we have, inside our biography, inside our history, inside who we are, even how difficult it seems. There is a place that we can open and experience freedom. We don't need to run away from anything. Everything opens to us if we look at it. and transforms to freedom.